for now, let me welcome to the stage Mr. Steve McClure.
Thank you. Okay, thanks for coming along. Now, I must admit, I never thought I'd be standing up talking about a book that I'd written. I mean, in fact, to be honest, I never really thought I would write a book. You know, I'm not the sort of person that writes massive books like this. I tend to write for the climbing magazines. I've been writing for about 15 years for the magazines. I've got my own column, but it's nothing like actually writing a book. It's a completely different animal. And I really enjoyed the whole process of writing this autobiography, which tends to start right at the beginning of my life and it goes all the way through. So I actually started writing it about 5 years ago. It was on a trip to China. Now, China's a pretty amazing place. Some of you may have been there. It's really, really different to the UK. And I was on this climbing trip, and it was quite a long trip. I was traveling around most of the time by myself, but we got to sort of mix with all of the local culture, meet with the local community, and it's really different to back home, like really different to the UK. Got to sample the local food as well, which is definitely different to your local Chinese shop, that is for sure. Some of it good, some of it not so good at all. Those funny little sort of feet, birds' feet, you know, definitely stay well away from them. But also, I was spending quite a bit of time, I guess, traveling by myself. So like lots of long bus journeys, long train journeys, obviously long flights as well. So I was, I was kind of, I suppose to a certain extent, I was a little bit down, a little bit lonely. And I think for me, I found I could actually write better in that state of mind. You know, if I'm like busy and doing lots of stuff and running around, then I haven't got time to write. You know, my head is full of other things to do. So when I was on this trip, I had time to settle down and really sort of put some time into working, into writing this book. So I think one of the things that I noticed most, I'm just adjusting this mouthpiece. Is that better? Is that okay? Okay. One of the things I noticed writing the book was I've been to a lot of places, like some really good places around the world, like loads and loads of them. And it was amazing to see how many places I'd been to. But also, I think what I spotted was it wasn't a solo journey. Going to all these places, it wasn't just about me. There was other people behind the scenes, people that helped me along the way. I think it just really, it helped me put things in perspective. So it was a really interesting journey, the actual whole book writing. So, the autobiography itself, it tends to start at the beginning and work through to the end. I suppose they tend to do that. That's their thing, really. You can probably see a common theme running through my life here. This is like me, the young, me, the middle, and then me, the old, at the end. Not that I'm that old, but there's a common theme going through there, and this is certainly the way it's been all the way through. So I tried to sort of pitch the book to everybody, really. So I've not tried to fill it through with climbing jargon. It's not full of technical terms the whole way through. The book is really about like my whole sort of life going through climbing, but really it's about everything else that's around it. So hopefully it's appealing to everybody, not just rock climbers. So, as was mentioned before, both my parents were keen climbers. There was no escape for me at all, really. So right from the start, this is my first route. As you can see, it's not a very hard one, but got to start somewhere. So that's me just making my first steps onto the rock face. But with both parents keen climbers, no real escape. I was into it right from the start. And I was brought up in Teesside, which, I mean, you might know Teesside on the northeast coast of England. Kind of known for its industry. A lot of, there used to be a lot of shipbuilding and steelworks around there. Not so much these days. It's not a bad place to live, actually. I quite enjoyed living there. It's got some really quite nice countryside, quite local. The North York Moors is a stone's throw away, and it's, I don't know whether you've ever been to the North York Moors, but they're really beautiful. They're kind of overlooked, and they're quite remote and unspoiled. So I spent a lot of time on the moors as a kid. Some of the climbing we've got there it's okay. You know, it's not vast. It's not like, you know, the Peak District. It's not like North Wales. But what we've got there is quite nice to climb on. It tends to be quite quite short, quite punchy. It's quite technical. It's a good place to learn, though. And the rock is all, it's a sandstone type of rock, which is really heavily featured. It's a lot of little holes to place your hands and your feet. And this makes it a good place to learn how to climb, especially when you're young. You know, when I say young, I mean like really young, when, you know, like 2, 3, 4 years old. Not like 8, 9, 10, but really young. It means you can always find something to hold on to. So this was my like starting out point, really. And when I go back to the North York Moors with my kids, and I see them like running around and playing on all the rocks, I realize that I really had a good head start here, because it's, you learn about balance and friction and movement, stuff that you would never learn in a climbing gym. So a lot of the kids these days, they go straight to the gym, and that's where they stay. And then when they go outside at 16, 17, they've kind of missed that opportunity. So the whole time that I was going out with my parents, I knew that I was getting more and more motivated by this sport. By the time I got to maybe 16, suddenly it was like, right, now I want to branch out and visit all these amazing places all around the country. And I can't remember if I just announced it to my parents or if they said it was okay, but that's when we started to go hitchhiking all around the country. Now, there used to be loads of hitchhikers, like going back to the mid-80s, like that was the way everybody got around. You know, you go to a junction on the M1, there might be 40 people there, and they'd be the same at every motorway junction around the whole country, but now you don't see any. So we hitchhiked everywhere. We went to North Wales, went to South Wales, went to the Peak District, went to Scotland, went to Devon, went to Cornwall. I mean, these are like, it was a long way. You know, you'd hitchhike from Teesside to Scotland and it would take you 2 days, it might even take you 3 days. But that's what we would put ourselves through. But it was definitely worth it. I think the longest we actually went was down to the south of France. Went to experience some of the really big walls down there. This is a picture of the Verdon Gorge, which is one of my most favorite places to climb. It's a beautiful place. Scale is vast, much, much bigger than anything we've got in England. And the climbing style is really good. It's really good quality rock. It's very hard. It's very technical. And this is where I learned all of my climbing skills. I think we spent 6 weeks down there on our first trip and then 5 weeks on the next trip. Really good adventures for a young kid. But I knew all the time that I was moving around that the place I really wanted to base myself was in Sheffield. Now, Sheffield is, I think it's pretty well known to be the sort of climber's mecca of the UK. It's obviously situated right in the Peak District. It's got a lot of really good climbing around it. It's also a home of the rock type called gritstone. And gritstone is, it's just really nice to climb on. It's like, imagine like a wizened old tree with big branches that you just want to climb up. It's like that. It's just really nice to climb on. It's lovely rock. But also, Sheffield was the place where all the best climbers lived. All the best parties were there. It was like, it was the scene. So I wanted to go to Sheffield desperately. So I made a beeline to try and get into Sheffield. So I started off getting on a university course, did mechanical engineering. And as soon as I arrived, I knew I'd made the right choice. It was a good course, but the city itself, it's just a really good city. This is a picture of, well, the city itself, looking out over the city. And this place here, I can be in about 15 minutes on my bike from where I live. And behind there is just unbroken hillside. There's like no houses. There's nothing. So it's a great city to live in. I definitely made the right choice. And in terms of the climbing as well, the climbing is really good. It was everything I'd hoped it would be. This is a picture of a route called London Wall. Now, you probably don't realize, but when a climber does a route for the very first time, they're the first person ever to climb it. They get to name it, and give it a name. First person up this, he called it London Wall. Not entirely sure why, but it's a good name. It's a really good route as well. And this was the kind of route that I really sought out in the Peak District. It's hard, it's technical, it's physical, it's quite scary, but at the same time, it's not necessarily dangerous. So this is what we call a traditional route. And with these kind of roots, you make them safe by placing the protection into little cracks and holes. You can see on this picture here, my zapper doesn't work, but you can see I'm holding a collection of what looks like bits of wire. They've got a little lump of metal on the end, and what you do is you place those in cracks, and as long as you place them well, they're generally pretty good. You know, they can be really very, very solid indeed. But this type of climbing, it accepts the full challenge of the cliff, really. So you know, you've got to hang on, you've got to place them. You can see I've got one just below me, just below my foot there, already clipped in. The rope's clipped into it. If I fall off, that's going to safeguard me from hitting the ground if I fall off. So it's this type of climbing, it's really good. As I say, it accepts the full challenge of the cliff. Unfortunately, with this rock type known as gritstone, as they get harder and harder, the climbs, the handholds tend to disappear, and so do the cracks where you might want to put protection. Things start to get a little bit scary. This is a really good example of a route with, well, there's no handholds on there, no footholds, there's definitely no protection. If he falls off, he's definitely going to hit the ground. But I think he'll be all right, because he's got a nice stack of these portable crash pads at the bottom. You can see those little pads there. They're like quite a new invention, really, and we tend to carry them around, and you'll place them at the bottom of the cliff, and hopefully you'll land on them. So I think he's going to be okay, this guy. This guy, he's brought his crash pad as well, but he needs to be a good shot if he falls off, that's for sure. This is a good example of a gritstone traditional route where the protection just isn't quite enough. I mean, this guy, he has got protection. It's placed just at the bottom of this face. So it's just about there. Now, it doesn't take a maths genius to work out that if he falls off from where he is now, he's going to go a long way. He might even hit the floor. In fact, he probably will hit the floor. Hopefully, he'll hit his nicely positioned crash pad. Let's hope so, anyway. So this is a classic example of a scary gritstone route. And there's quite a few of them around, to be honest. Now, I'd found that I was struggling with the harder route. So I'd arrived in Sheffield, and I'd moved my way through the grades quite quickly, and I was left with these, what were relatively bold, sometimes quite dangerous climbs. This is another good example. All I've got to do is make one hard move, and I can reach that crack, and I should finish the climb from there. But it's quite high up. Now, I must have tried this route maybe 15 times, and when I started going out to try this, you know, those crash pads, they weren't invented. I'd be out by myself, and I knew that if I fell off, I was going to really hurt myself. There's no doubt about it. I really wanted to do it, and it was going to be a good buzz if I did it, but spending 2 months with, you know, my legs in plaster, if I didn't do it, it was not great. So I started to fall out with climbing, which was, for me, it was like, this, what's going on? Like, I'm a rock climber, that's all I do. I've come to Sheffield to go rock climbing, and now I'm kind of like losing my way a little bit. But, and it wasn't too bad. There's a lot of climbing in England, all around the country. So I found myself in places like North Wales and in South Wales, particularly Pembroke. I don't know whether you've been to Pembroke, but it's a lovely spot, good climbing. And I really get on with the climbing there. It's vertical on the whole. It's technical. The protection is generally quite good. The movement's fantastic. And obviously the scenery is beautiful as well. Now, I say I love it. I do definitely love it. But it's funny to say that because I had two incidents which completely shaped my entire climbing career. Both accidents, unfortunately. First one was on a relatively easy climb. It's this climb here. It's called Blue Sky. Not so hard. It's a graded VS, for those that know the terms. And I was climbing with a guy, and due to a bit of a mix-up in communication, best not done, I snapped a handhold off just above where the higher of the two climbers is, a little bit higher than that, and I landed, fell all the way down, and landed on this convenient ledge here, which was a bit nasty to say the least, and then bounced into the sea. Needless to say, I didn't get away completely free. I got a free helicopter ride, which was a bonus, to the hospital, and free hospital service. But I spent a while in hospital. I had a punctured lung and various other sort of smashed bits. But I think I did use it one of my nine lives there. And I've got away with it, but I was definitely a bit... I mean, I was mentally, I was a little bit knocked sideways. But it wasn't that incident that really took a hammering. It was also down in Pembroke. I mean, you'd think I'd learn. But I was down in Pembroke a few years later with a really good friend of mine. And he was climbing it in front of me, so he was going up first. And he took what was quite a short fall, to be honest, but it ended up being really nasty. So he landed badly, like landed on his head, right by my feet, like literally as close as that glass of water is, right down in a heap. So I rolled him over, not knowing what I was going to see, but it was pretty bad, you know, smashed head, like bits of bone all over the place sticking out, blood everywhere. Like I've never seen, I could never imagine that much blood could be in somebody. It was just coming out all over the place. And so I had to sort of sit with him and try and keep him together while the helicopter was called. And then the helicopter came back and then zipped him off to hospital. And I flew off to hospital as well, hitching my way there. You can imagine trying to hitch a ride to hospital knowing your best mate was there. So I finally got to hospital and they said, well, it's not looking good. Like, we don't think he's going to survive, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. A few days later, they said, okay, he's going to survive, but brain damage is looking very likely. So they kept him in a coma for quite a while. Eventually, he came out of the coma, and I won't dwell, but he has made a full recovery, you'd be pleased to hear. And that's a picture of him flying his kite, ironically, in Pembroke, of all places. But he doesn't climb anymore, which I'll let him off, even though it is the best sport. But he's moved away from climbing, and I see him regularly. But these two incidents, they made a huge difference to my climbing. And I cover those in detail in my book. It's one of the things that I think is super important to the way that my climbing has moved and how I've sort of found different types of the sport. So it was a tricky period because I was still somebody who went rock climbing. That was still what I wanted to do. But I would turn up at the cliff. I wouldn't be so motivated to actually climb. It would be hard work to actually bring myself to climb. But even more than that, I would watch other people climbing, and all I could see was the risk. You know, if that guy falls now, how close to the ground is he going to be? You know, how good is his protection? Is it going to rain? Is it windy? You know, all these things are in my mind. And eventually I just thought, man, I can't deal with this. Like, I'm going to have to step aside for a bit and do something else. But that was okay. I was a student. You know, as a student, there's a lot of things to do. You know, I've got to sort of enjoy the whole student world, partying, discos, drinking. It was great. In fact, it was probably a good thing. Otherwise, I would have missed out on that whole student thing. So I did the whole student thing, got some rubbish jobs after that, went traveling. Went to places like India, which was great. India's a great country. The food's amazing. I just couldn't get enough of it down me. As you can see, I look pretty skinny there. Went off to into Nepal as well. Did quite a lot of the trekking peaks there. No actual rock climbing as such. It was just sort of like high altitude walking to a certain extent. Also went over to Thailand, which was, again, a really amazing country. Experience all the culture and the cuisine out there is amazing. It was actually whilst I was in Thailand, of all places, that I actually started to get back into climbing. I was on the east coast of Thailand, which is a great place, the east coast of Thailand. The architecture of the rock over there is just incredible. You might have seen pictures like this on the TV. You might have been there, but it's a really special place. And I realized as soon as I was there, this could be a really good place to actually climb. There's so much rock around here. So I started getting back into it. One of the things that I noticed straight away was this was a really great place to climb. Like, British climbing is great. There's no doubt about it. But it can be a bit scary and, you know, it might rain. You've probably got a long walk in to get there and it might go dark. You might get lost. You know, there's lots of things about British climbing that make it great, but here, this was like luxury climbing. This was like, it never rains, it's always warm, sandy beach to start off, and then you finish and go to the bar or have a swim. you know, yeah, this is good. I can deal with this. I'll have a bit of this sort of climbing if you don't mind. But the main difference between this climbing and the climbing I was used to was this was all protected by in situ protection. So you don't place it as you climb, it's already in. You can see from this picture here, there's stuff hanging out of the rock, yeah? So that's called, this is called sport climbing. And the reason why they're in place already is there just is nowhere to place protection on this type of rock. You just couldn't place any. So they're actually placed with a drill, 10 millimeter drill, steel bolt, they don't come out, they're super solid, and they allow the climber to really push themselves physically. So it's not very scary, it's very safe as long as you take obvious precautions. It's a different type of climbing. And I found myself really motivated by this. I think I needed a change. I've been doing the same sort of climbing for a long time. This was something new, it was different, it was fresh, it was exciting, it was hard. And there was so much of it there as well. I didn't spend anywhere near as long as I wanted, but as soon as I got back home to Britain, I made a beeline to try and locate as much sport climbing as I could find. And ironically, there's actually a lot of it. This is about 15 miles from where I live. It's a crag called Raven's Tor. It's one of the premier cliffs in the UK. It's got some really hard climbs. And I found I was working my way through the grades pretty quick, really into the type of climbing. And I entered into the climbing scene at just the right time. Now, I'll show you a few of the hard routes that I've done. And at the time, there was a number of routes which had been tried by all the best climbers, and they hadn't managed to do them, and they'd left them abandoned. And I managed to, basically, I've managed to build an entire climbing career out of the routes which had been left behind. And these stand as the hardest routes in the whole of the country. Some of them have been repeated by maybe one person, and quite a lot of them have had no repeats at all in over 18 years. So we're doing well there. So I built my whole career on this, which it's been like an absolutely fantastic journey, although just a small part of the whole thing. Now, getting back into climbing was great. I also started to get back into traditional climbing as well, despite having my sort of mishaps before. I found that with my new strength and my new fitness and my new motivation, and I guess to a certain extent, being used to falling off, because the sport climbing, you can fall off. I found I could push myself a lot harder with the traditional climbing as well. This is the hardest traditional climbing in the UK. I'm making an ascent here. But just before I actually made the ascent, I tried it. I've got a little bit of video footage I'll show you here of me trying to do one of the ascents. Come on!
I gotcha.
Come on, Steve. That's it. Stay tight. Come on.
100%.
Oh, yeah.
Stay tight. Come on. 100%.
Oh, yeah.
As you can see, it was quite a tumble, that one, but completely all right. Like, no scrapes, no, I won't say no danger, because if the natural protection pulls out, then obviously you're in trouble. But it stayed in, fortunately, for that fall. So whilst I was going through this sort of journey of getting into climbing and doing loads and loads of it, I was actually working as an engineer at the time. I started off after I finished my degree, just trying to combine my climbing with my degree to a certain extent. It was quite hard work to combine the two things. So I was working on the ropes, we call it, which is you're abseiling inside chimneys, you're abseiling outside chimneys, you're painting, you're cleaning, you're doing stuff like that, which is all right, but to a certain extent, you're never going to progress that far. And ultimately, I found myself in a more sort of conventional type of job. And I got a job with a car brake manufacturer. So I was kind of researching their car brakes, which was okay, about 4 years working in that kind of environment. And then I got a job as a design engineer, which again was okay. It was much more of a normal job though. So I'd get 4 weeks a year holiday, I'd work 8:30 till 5:30. You know, not really much flexibility. Same as what most people do. And it was, I was quite happy with that to a certain extent, but I kind of realized that maybe I needed a little bit more. The climbing was going really well, and I was struggling to fit them both in. And I had to sort of like make this decision, like what do I do? Like what do I want with my career? What do I want with my life? You know, what am I gonna do next? So I decided that I would abandon the job, which felt like a very big decision. I dwelled on it for a long time. I decided to push it aside and see what would happen next. So the first thing I did was I booked and organized a trip to Greenland, this massive lump of rock here. This is 1,000 meters high, so it's a big chunk of rock. We went to try and climb that big corner in the middle. Nobody had been there before. It was completely untouched, so it was a fantastic experience. It was all traditional climbing, of course. Had to be quite careful. You had to keep your wits about you, because we'd got dropped off by the boatman. He ferried us into the fjord, and basically he left us there for a month. He said, right, we'll be back on, you know, August the 1st. See you later. So any trouble, it's up to us to sort it out. So you had to really keep your wits about you. It was a great experience. I don't really want to talk about that trip so much, but the point was, we were out there for 5 weeks. It was a trip that I would never have been able to do, ever, with my normal job. Couldn't have comprehended it. And I really realized that there's so much to do in the world. So, okay, I could have continued with my engineering job. It was a nice career path. You know, I could have a mortgage and a nice telly and all that sort of stuff. Or I could experience stuff like this. And it was a no-brainer, really. Okay, so the telly could go out the window, but I could live with that. So, how can I make some money? I thought I could try and carve a living out of the climbing industry somehow. This is my first effort, a little thing I made up on a copy of Photoshop I probably nicked from somebody. Managed to slowly get the ball rolling, and these days I do all kinds of different things. Everything from talks like this, or lectures, writing, obviously for the magazines. I've written a book as well, obviously. I do lots of staff development, product development, coaching. I work in the climbing gyms. Lots of different stuff. It's probably more than I used to do in my normal engineering job, but it's so much more flexible. And that really is the key to it. So, for example, when I heard about this event today, they contacted me and said, can you do it? Looked at my diary. Yep, that day is free. Just make sure nothing else gets in the way. Tomorrow I'm going to Hull. And then the next day I'm going to Spain. Lots of different things. And this really is the benefit of being self-employed. And things have kind of worked out pretty well, particularly in the ability to travel. Now, as long as I've managed to chunk some work together and save up enough cash, so many places out there. And I'm pretty lucky to have managed to have gone to so many different places around the world. I've climbed with some of the best climbers in the world, been to some of the best places, climbed some of the best routes. I still feel as though I've barely scratched the surface as well. And I probably spent, it must have been a good few years after I'd finally managed to get things going, just bouncing from one place to the next. So, for example, if I got a job coaching in Italy for a week or something, I would deliberately stay on after the coaching in Italy, climb there for a bit, and then maybe I'd try and coordinate it so I would, rather than flying home, I would fly to maybe Norway, do some talks in Norway, and then on the way home from Norway, go into France. You know, rather than just sort of dipping in and dipping out, and try and experience loads of different things. So I was constantly on the go, and it was great fun, but I think after a while I started to find that I was losing interest in it, which was very strange. You know, this was like my dream life, but it was feeling a little bit transient, maybe a little bit hollow, lacked direction. I think I needed to get something else in my life. I needed to get stuck into something. It was all very well waking up in the morning and going to maybe one of the best cliffs in the whole world, doing a climb. If I did it, great. If I fell off it, never mind. There's one over there. Just try the next one. I needed to focus on something more and to really sort of channel my energies into something very specific. Now, I mentioned earlier about the routes that I was doing in Britain that were the hardest routes, like the most difficult routes in the country. Now, those routes, they are really very hard. This is a picture of a place called Malham Cove in the Yorkshire Dales. It's an absolutely beautiful place. The routes here rank amongst the hardest routes, definitely in the country, some of the hardest routes in the world. Now, with these hard, hard climbs, we don't just turn up and do them. They're a bit like, imagine a gymnastic floor routine in the Olympics. You know, those guys that come out and do all those mad flips and jumps and leaps and stuff like that, they haven't just made it up. They've practiced it for years, maybe. So each individual twist, they practice that over and over and over again until they've got it sorted, and then they might try and link it into something else, and they'll practice that. Eventually, they'll build up a whole routine where they can do it in one go, then they'll come out on the day and try and make it perfect. This is what we try and do with the hardest climbs. Because they're protected by these in-situ protection, you can actually hang on them, you can fall on them, you can practice over and over again. You can make it so that you can push yourself as hard as you can. And some of the hardest routes take days and days and days and days to get them absolutely perfect. Rather than me trying to explain what I'm talking about in more detail, I'm just going to show you a couple of minutes of video footage taken from a BBC program, actually, which was shown a few years ago. You might have seen it. It was called Inside Out. Kind of explains things a bit easier.
Malham Cove, a jewel in the Yorkshire landscape, a perfect limestone amphitheatre carved over thousands of years.
At 80 metres high and 300 metres wide, Malham Cove is quite simply stunning, and it's home to some of the best rock climbing in the country.
Malham Cove's probably the best sport cliff in Britain. On a world scale, as good as anywhere, definitely.
Malham Cove has always been a place which is known for difficult climbs, and I guess each generation come along and they try and take it to the next level.
Climbers have been coming here since the 1950s. The sheer walls and intimidating drops rank this site among any you'll find in Britain. Each attempt is an energy-sapping slog at the rock face, requiring a mix of power, precision and technique. In sport climbing, brute strength alone is not enough.
This route in particular is a lot more physical than a lot of routes. A lot of routes involve a lot of arm work, fingers and arms, but this, it's so long and involved, it's on the legs, it's on the back, it's the shoulders, everything gets tired. And you come down, you feel like you've been run over by a train.
At Malham Cove, any moisture on your fingertips, where holds are measured in millimetres, will ruthlessly and dramatically separate success from failure.
It looks better when you're climbing it. It's hard to describe, but you know when I had that sort of like knee jam rest? From there, you look up and you can just see all these quick draws hanging, going off into space, and they're all hanging out. You know, the rock's like 45 degrees overhanging, so there's all these quick draws hanging, leading you on like a kind of, like a pathway. And it's like, whoa, that's where I'm going over there. It just looks mental.
Yes, come on.
I did get to within two hand movements, literally, and the two hand moves would have taken me that much further up the rock face to where there is a good hold, and I can recover, and I'll finish the route from then. So yeah, that far, two hand movements, 2 seconds.
But that could take you...
It could take me 2 visits, 10 visits, 2 years, 10 years, never, you know. It's a funny game, because when you're climbing right your limit, everything counts. And, you know, when you're at your limit, you might not quite get there. Maybe I've overstretched myself by a little bit.
Each attempt lasts about 15 minutes, but leaves Steve needing at least an hour to recover. On his second attempt, he fails again in exactly the same place. Then, late in the afternoon, there's a sudden change in the weather, and the conditions are almost perfect.
So this is it, Steve's final attempt of the day.
Physically, he can only make three real attempts in any one day. If he fails now, he'll have to wait for another opportunity.
You're trying to be precise. One of the biggest things about climbing here is foothills are tiny. They're kind of like a matchstick edge wide.
Exhausted, Steve takes a rest. It's a section called the Bat Hang and offers brief respite.
You're just in the zone when you climb and you're thinking about what's going on. You don't think that hurts or that's too small. You're just focusing on the next move, basically, and making it all work correctly. It's quite nice when you've done a route, in a way. Kind of you like look on a route as a friend. You know, it's a friend all the way through, but then having done it, it's, you know, it's like a true friend. You can look back on it and think, oh, yeah, I did enjoy doing that.
Then he's on to the final section. It's where he's fallen off on previous attempts, but he's just feet away from success.
Come on. Even closer.
I was tired from the other go. I was definitely quite a lot more tired, but kind of conditions were better. It was a bit cooler. Hang on a little bit harder, a little bit longer.
How close were you there then?
Oh man, really close. One hand move away. Just, you know, 1 second's worth of climbing. But...
is it quite disappointing?
At least again, to have another go.
So nearly, but not quite on this occasion. Still, if it was easy, we'd all be doing it.
I'll definitely keep coming back till I've done this one, and I'll keep coming back for years more, trying other ones.
Definitely kept going back for years more, that's for sure. And I did actually luckily get that route. I think it might have even been the next visit. It actually wasn't that hard relative to the other hard routes. This one here was considerably harder. This one took me 42 individual trips to the crag to do it. That's the longest I've ever spent on any route that I've actually managed to get up. I'm not sure it's the hardest thing I've ever done, but it's certainly one of the hardest rock climbs ever. But in terms of hard things, maybe the hardest thing I've ever done is having a couple of kids. Man, that is hard work. Never saw that one coming. Certainly when my missus first said this is the way it's going to be, I was like, well, hang on a minute. Like, I was outfitting with my climbing and stuff like that. I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But needless to say, things are obviously amazing having kids. Those of you who've got them will definitely vouch for that. They're definitely the best thing you'll ever do in your life. And we still go out and try and do a bit of climbing every now and again. I try and give them the same sort of start I had. I don't try and push them into it. We just go out and we play. And if they get interested later, then great. But one of the things that I really spent a long time dwelling on whilst I was writing my autobiography was the complexity of having some kids and how it changes you as a person and how things start to get really kind of mixed up. Like I was confused. Like 1 minute I was a climber and it was just like, right, what I do is I go climbing. It's as simple as that. That's what I want to do. That's what I'm motivated by. All of a sudden, it was starting to get difficult. I wanted to be away climbing, but then when I was away climbing, I wanted to come home to my kids and my family. And then when I was at home, I wanted to go away. Didn't know who I was anymore. It was just really getting very tricky. I think a lot of people go through the same kind of process. And I found that everything changed. Certainly myself as a person, I feel as though I've moved in many different directions. And this was maybe the biggest challenge that I've faced was kind of coming to terms with the new me and building my new life around what was the most important thing now, which was having two kids. But at the same time, climbing's so important. I was keeping hold of that as well. And I suppose one of the things I've channeled my energy into now is doing the hardest things I can possibly do. You know, things that are just desperately, physically really hard. And it kind of fits in quite well with having a family, You know, I can try and do stuff which is relatively local. I still do quite a bit of travelling around. I'm going to Spain in a few days. I'm going to South Africa for a few weeks in the near future. So there's still stuff going on, but I'm really motivated now by the hardest things I can possibly do. And as I speak, I'm actually in training for a route which I've been trying for even more than 40 days. I've been trying it for about 60 days. It's one of the hardest individual routes left in the whole of the UK. There's not very many of them left because I've kind of done them all already. But this one, it's the next level. So I've actually managed to climb up this. It'll be the hardest route in the country, be one of the hardest routes in the world. And that, I mean, even to be trying it at my like old age, I'm 45 now, you know, that's saying something. In most sports, people would be like, you know, they'd be well over the hill by 40, never mind 45. I still seem to be making gains. I think that's really helped, you know, the fact that I feel as though I'm getting stronger and fitter. I spent quite a bit of time featuring that in the book as well. You know, it's not over yet. It's definitely not over yet. So if I manage to climb up this route, it'll be, you know, certainly the best achievement of my climbing career. Okay, well, thanks very much for coming along. Hope you've get an insight into climbing right at the sort of like the hardest levels and the whole thing really. Climbing is a great sport when used as a vehicle. It takes you to places, and maybe that is even the best thing about climbing. Thanks again. Okay, I guess I've been asked if anybody wants to ask a question at all.
Does your wife climb?
My wife, she used to climb, but since we had kids, she doesn't climb anymore, which is really useful actually. Because if she was me, if she was like me, if there was two of me in the family, it would be a disaster. So fortunately, she's quite chilled, so I can go climbing, and then we can do stuff together. If she wanted her to climbing time, it'd be bad news. So fortunately, she stopped. Any more questions? Oh, two over there.
Where's that?
Where's that? That is also Malham Cove. It's the hardest one I've never done. Hopefully I will do it. It's the only one I haven't actually done that I've tried. So, touch wood, if I can find some, we'll get up it.
Did you do all your learning of climbing, fitness and diet? Through family and friends, or did you have any more formal approach to that?
Certainly when I started climbing, there was very little in terms of like how to progress. Climbing is quite a new sport. The whole training and the diet and everything that goes with it is very new in terms of reaching a top edge. So my starting out was just, we just went out climbing. We just went out and climbed and stuff. But even now, there's very little is known about how to reach your true potential. It's a really complicated sport. If you're into something which is more simple, like maybe, say, some sort of gymnastics or sort of weightlifting or something like that, it's very easy to know how to train for it. But climbing is, it's got so many different parts that make up the sport. I mean, you've got to face fear, you've got weather conditions, you've got diet, you've got the whole movement side of it, and that's before you even touch on physical. So it's a complicated sport. I think we're all making it up as we go along. I think, to be honest, once somebody works it all out, then I'll just become rubbish compared to them. But hopefully I've got a while. Another one there, two there.
I was going to ask, did you work with any club at any point when you were training? Did you go up through any clubs?
Any clubs?
Yes, any climbing clubs? Or?
Loads of nightclubs. But,
no, I meant climbing clubs.
I've been involved in the Cleveland Mountaineering Club, where I used to live, and I'm also one of the British Mountaineering Club ambassadors.
Have you ever progressed from the walking in the Himalayas or in Nepal? Have you gone on to winter climbing, or have you just stuck with rock all the way through?
No, I used to do a bit of winter climbing. To be honest, I completely abandoned that once the family came along, because time just got a little bit more precious. And I mean, if anybody's been winter climbing up in places like Scotland, it's unbelievably frustrating, because you drive up there on a Friday night, and it was a really good forecast, but now suddenly actually it's raining and you've got 2 days of slopping around in slush, and you come home again and you've just kind of wasted a weekend. So I kind of sacked it off since then, but I mean, I'm not cut out to be a winter climber. I've got no fat on me. I'd die in a minute. No chance. Okay, right, well, I'll be sat over there scribbling if anybody wants to come over. The massive stack of books. Again, thanks for your time. Cheers.
Big round of applause for Steve McClure.